Okay, we're going to begin here at 13 lines down on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. Kufa, Amar Shmuel, Amar Rabbi, Halocha ke Rabbi Yossi, De Amar Mile lo Mimsren Lishliach. So this is something that we saw yesterday within the Psak of Shmuel, that Rabbi Yossi had two parts to his Shita. One is this, which is that you cannot give over intangible objects, instructions to another Shliach. You can't pass that from one Shliach to another Shliach. The second thing we saw in Rabbi Yossi's Shita was that you can't say Be'imru. If he specifically instructs them to pass it on to another Shaliach, we still don't allow you to do that according to Rabbi Yossi. And we saw at the end of yesterday's daf that Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Yossi in one aspect, but not in the other aspect. The aspect that he does paskin like him is here, which is Mile lo Mimser and the Shliach. You cannot pass intangible objects, instructions to another Shliach. But if you are specifically granted or commanded to pass those instructions on, Shmuel there does not paskin like Rabbi Yossi and allows you to pass them on to the Shaliach. Amar Lifanav Rabbi Shimon Birabi. Here it's very difficult to understand, just so you know, that Amar Shmuel Marabi is not very common in Shas, that Shmuel is quoting Rabbi directly. And over here, where you have Amar Lifanav Rabbi Shimon Birabi, seems unusual, if not incorrect, because that would be Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi. Shmuel, who is found in Bavel, was unlikely to interact with Rabbi Shimon Birabi. You can see here there's a girsa change to Rabbi Shmuel by Rabbi Yossi, which might be a better understanding over here, unless we know that in places the Gemara, quote-unquote, fictionalizes conversations in order to extend or explain the machloket between parties or differences to between parties. Amar lefanav Rabbi Shimon Barabi, Machar Shrabi Meir, Vichanina Ish Ono Chokim Arabi Yossi. In our Mishnah, where we saw the position of Rabbi Meir, who was quoted first, which is that it makes a difference whether you say the instructions to two, or you say the instructions to three. If you say it to two, then you're speaking to Edim, and they have to do exactly as they were instructed. If you say it to three, they're a Beit Din, which means they're appointed to ensure that whatever needs to happen will happen. That was Rabbi Meir's distinction that Rabbi Yossi did not accept. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Meir had that opinion. In addition, Rav Chanina showed up with a Mesorah from Rabbi Akiva in prison that supported Rabbi Meir's position. So since both of them are choleka Rabbi Yossi, they're arguing Rabbi Yossi, Mara Rabbi Lomar Alocha ke Rabbi Yossi. Why did Rabbi in the end say that the Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi? Amarlo, Shtok v'ni shtok, be silent, my son, be silent. Lo ra'ita et Rabbi Yossi. You never saw Rabbi Yossi. Ilmale ra'ito, nimuko or nimuku imo. As Rashi says over here, perisho imo. It's always in his direction. Let's say, tam l'chol dvarav, sheim yashevet dvarav. When he says something, it was well articulated, well explained, and sat well with people, and was logically laid out so that it was convincing that his position was the right position. Rashi says that here. Rashi in Irvin translates it slightly differently, which is Davar Yashar Kikava Mishkolet. Something straight, like a plumb line, which means that Imuko Imo was his way or his derech was very straight, understandable, clear, and therefore you would paskin like him. So he says, since you didn't experience Rabbi Yossi, you don't know or don't understand the weight that his word or his position carries. Right, this is one of the nuances that in the age of the printing press and the advent of Sfarim, so we read an opinion. You read one opinion, you read another opinion, and they're both as convincing. We don't know why you go this way or that way. To experience a learning from a Rebbe directly, where you hear Rabbi Yossi giving his opinion, explaining his opinion, that's a very different experience than simply reading Rabbi Yossi's opinion in the Mishnah. And that's what he's suggesting to him here, that you've never experienced that learning with Rabbi Yossi. Had you experienced with it, you would know what it means that Rabbi Yossi has an opinion and how overwhelming that is, even versus Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Chanina, meaning that it's so convincing and so compelling that we would paskin like Rabbi Yossi. Titanio. Isi ben Yehuda ya monesh shivchan shel chachamim. Isi ben Yehuda used to enumerate the praises of the different chachamim. Rabbi Meir, Chacham v'Sofer. Rabbi Meir is both a Talmid Chacham as well as a Sofer. Now, he is a Sofer by profession. The Gemara in the beginning of In Erevin Yud Gimel speaks about him learning by Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, learning his Safrut, his experiences there as a Sofer. We also bumped into him in other places as a Sofer. Talmud Chacham, we know Rabbi Meir is a tremendous Talmud Chacham. There again, the Gemara talks about the unbelievable Charifut, erudition of Rabbi Meir, that in some senses we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir, because he was so amazingly sharp that he could convince you of anything. So it was very hard for people to be omed al dato, to really get to the bottom of what he was saying, because he was so bright and sharp that he was able to convince you of it. They didn't know if he was right or he was wrong in any situation. And that in many instances leads us not to paskin like Rabbi Meir, despite his charifut. Rabbi Yehuda, who is many times a bal plukta of Rabbi Meir, chacham kishiyirtze. So this is a very difficult statement. The kishiyirtze almost seems like a little bit of a criticism of Rabbi Yehuda. You can see in Rashi that he says the kishiyirtze, kishaya rotze liot matun, umityashe bidvarav aya chacham. When he wanted to be calm and settled in his ways, then he was a chacham. So from Rashi, it seems much more of a veiled criticism of Rabbi Yehuda, which is that when he puts his mind to it and settles down, he's able to be successful. Tosafot, in a slightly nuanced way, turns it more positive, which is chacham lekishiyirtze yoter mi Rabbi Meir. He's able to be even greater than Rabbi Meir. V'dilma Rabbi Meir Charif Umakshe, and even though Rabbi Meir, as we mentioned before, was sharp and had questions, Rabbi Yehuda Maton Umesik, he was able to be calm in the face of Rabbi Meir's sharpness and to respond to him in a level-headed manner. So Tosafot there takes it as a more positive aspect, which is that his ability to deal with Rabbi Meir and his sharpness was a credit to Rabbi Yehuda. In addition to that, we have the Oruch, who also speaks about that Rabbi Yehuda was the Rosh HaMidabrim. He was the one who spoke first in every situation. That's based on the Gemara in Shabbat with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Gemara there, that Rabbi Yehuda was given the opportunity to speak first. That also might be implied over here because of the nature of his level-headedness, that he was given the opportunity to speak first, or when he spoke, everybody else listened. Then we have Rabbi Tarfon, Gal Shel Egozim. Tarfon is the equivalent of a pile of nuts, a pile of walnuts. Rashi says over here, when you pull out a nut from a pile, they all shake. And that's what Rashi says over here. Kach Rabbi Tarfon ba tamid b'shalo davar. Someone comes and asks Rabbi Tarfon a question. Hayemevilo raya mikra midrash mishnah halacha vagada kol yachad. He had such control over the material, he was able to give you a vast encyclopedic knowledge from all the different sources or disciplines and able to give you the answer that related to the question that you spoke about. So that's what it means, Gal Shel Egozim, that you move one nut and everything moves, means he's able to shake down the whole Torah to get you all the information you needed. Rabbi Yishmael, Chanut Miyuzenet. So here also the questions about the Girsa. The way Rashi explains Chanut Miyuzenet is Yena Muchan Batamid. The wine is always ready. But when you go to the store, you don't wait for them to get the stuff. It's right there, ready to be sold, to be taken off. That means that it was at the tip of his tongue. Rabbi Shmuel, you ask him anything, he had it right there. He didn't have to go search. He didn't have to think about it. He was able to respond because it was at the tip of his tongue. Tosfot over here says Lashon Mazon. That's a Lashon of food. And that's what Miyuzenet, rather than being prepared, but it's food itself. And the other girsa, or possibly over here, is Lashon Ziyun. Miyuzenet, which would be armed, possibly, which he was ready to do battle. He was battle ready. Again, I'm probably expressing a similar sentiment of being always ready. It was at the tip of his tongue. Rabbi Akiva, Otsar Balum. So over here, again, questions about the girsa. The way Rashi reads Otsar Balum is like a silo that is divided up. Means that the silo that has different segments or sections to it. Tosafot over here says that the girsa may not be balum, but rather balos. But a samach, and similarly he says, mashal lemelech sheyotzutav blusim v'chatumim umuravim. That's the storehouses of the king that were balus, chatum, umurav. Again, the idea being that it's talking about a storehouse, but the implications of this are different. The way that Rashi explains it is that Rabbi Akiva was a tremendous processing machine, which is that Rabbi Akiva, kishalamad mi rabutav, when he learned from his rebbeim, shemad davar mikra mi rabutav, acharav halacha, acharav midrash, acharav agada, so that he heard different aspects of Torah, natan li bo lachzor alehen, ulugarsan ad shiyus durim befiv, to go over them until he knew them well, v'lo amor elmod mikra la'atzmo, umidrash la'atzmo, aval kishenaseh chacham gadol, asa kol ha'torah matbeot matbeot. So when he went to learn, he learned everything mixed up. He got something here, a little Torah here, a little midrash here, a little halacha here. But when he became a chacham gadol and then went to reteach it, sider midrash sifri v'sifra levadan, v'shanan la'atzman le'talmidav, v'alachot la'atzman v'gadol la'atzman. He created a seder. He created an approach or an organization of the material to a point where it could be presented rather than being just a piece of here, a piece there, a piece here. He organized it, whether it was topically or alpia psukim, whatever the organization was, he was able to take the material, reorganize it, and bring it out in a manner that was presentable as an organized content. It's very similar to what the Rambam does in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam's tremendous koach is exactly that. He's able to, through his works, take information and compile it into a manner where he can present it in a organized fashion. And many of his works lead towards his magnum opus, the Yad HaChazakah, which is he's slowly organizing the Torah into a seder where he can present it in a methodology which is not like the Gemara, where you have a piece here, a piece there, a piece here, but rather as a topically relevant sefer. Similar to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein also, when he looked at Gemara, there could be a Tosfot in one Masechta, Tosfot in another Masechta. To him, it was all the same because he looked at things topically rather than just as, oh, here there's a Gemara in Brachot, Gemara here, Gemara there. He saw a topic, he was able to organize in his mind and see the topic be relevant across the spectrum or across the different cuts that you had there. He was able to amalgamate that into a single presentation of the material or of the idea. So that's what Rashi says Rabbi Akiva did. For Tosafot, it seems to be that it might be more along the lines of accumulation rather than division or segregating of the materials, but simply the tremendous amount of chokhmah that Rabbi Akiva was successful at accumulating. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Kupat Aruchlim is like the basket of those that sell. Ruchlim are peddlers that go around. So when you have a peddler, you have a little bit of everything there that he sells. And in addition to that, they are wrapped up in small cases, ready to be taken. And here Rashi says, Ve'ein shevach zeh dom eleh shel Rabbi Akiva. This is not like what Rabbi Akiva had. Shenatan libo tchilav lamara kol hambibulbal v'chakach sidran. Rabbi Akiva went and processed from taking everything that was mixed up and then divided it up into a logical manner. Over here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri seemingly learnt this way, meaning that his whole learning was in this manner, and that's how he maintained the information. He had piece here, everything in its proper place, and everything wrapped up nicely in its place. Belazar ben Azariah, kupa shel bisamim, is again a basket of spices. Here, seemingly it's synonymous, what we said before, kupat rochlim. Rashi over here differentiates and says, dome le kupat rochlim, similar to the kupat rochlim, because the Rochel, that's his business. That's his profession. Therefore, he has more items there. He wraps and packages them ready for the buyer to take them. So again, it is similar to the Kupat Rochel, but on a slightly lower level, which is there's not as many items there, and they're not as ready to be taken immediately. Mishnat Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Kav Vinaki. The Mishnayot, or that which Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, are kavanah ki. This is very important. This has halachic ramifications. The explanation usually is that kav is a small amount. Naki means clear and precise. So Rashi says over here, lo li made harbe kishar chavirav. He did not teach Torah as much as his fellow chachamim. Elamash omer bebeit midrash. Whatever he does say over, nakihu, is clean and clear. Shalacha kimoto. And that's the statement here of Mishnah Rabbi Elazar Kavanaki, is that ko makom Rabbi Elazar is found in the Mishnah, halacha kimoto. That is, because of this, anytime he speaks in a Mishnah, the halacha is like him. How far we extend this principle is a machloket in the Rishonim, as to whether this also applies to Braitot. Is this only said when the Gemara says that about Mishnayot, that the halacha is like him? Or even if he is manifest in a Braita, do we also say halacha ki Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? That comes up in different places in Shas, where we seemingly go against Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's position when he is found in a Braita. So in order to resolve that, some of the Rishonim suggest that that statement about Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is only said about a Mishnah, not necessarily said about a Braita. Others argue it's said about all Tanaic works in which he appears, because that's exactly the statement here. He doesn't appear so often, and when he does appear, what he says carries tremendous weight. Rabbi Yossi, and this is why we brought this down, is imiko imo. The tam, the reasoning, the logic follows him, or his explanations are both convincing and understandable by individuals, as opposed to Rabbi Meir's, whose harifut sometimes was above others, even though he might have been right. It was just they couldn't handle it, they couldn't follow him. Rabbi Yossi was able to explain it in a manner where it was mikubal. People were able to receive it, understand it, therefore halacha kimoto. Whether, again, this is Shmuel's answer, or the way the Gemara is speaking in the mouth of Shmuel, this idea that when you say halacha ki Rabbi Yossi, it's not just to be taken as, oh, this is one of the klalei apsak, halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, because of who he was, carried such weight in his position that if you had met Rabbi Yossi, you wouldn't question why the halacha is like him versus Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Chanina, where you would normally say, oh, it's two against one, he shouldn't prevail in this case. Nevertheless, because of the nature of his teaching and the way that he gave over the material, it carried so much weight with it that it's not surprising that Rabbi says, halacha ke Rabbi Yossi in this instance. Rabbi Shimon, tochein arbe umotze kim'a. He processed a lot and sent out a little. Again, here, it's not clear whether that is said in a more critical manner or in a more positive manner. The truth is that what we're quoting over here is found in the Braitot of Avot at Rabbi Natan. And over there, the Mishnayot, slight differences or nuances between what's said here, but also with more explication on some of these items. Over there, it seems to lean more to the negative side. Over here, Rashi interprets it in a positive manner, which is that he took a tremendous amount of Torah, processes it, and then spits out whatever is not relevant or whatever is incorrect. Tana, Mishokea Kim'a, he forgets very little. Umash Motzi, Enu Motzi Elo Subin. And whatever he expels or lets off is the bad stuff, the bran. The filter that knows how to dump out the bad stuff, and that which he forgets, again, is not necessarily so unintentional. Seems like more that what he forgets or what he pushes out is intentional because he sees that as not being worthy or it seems to be relevant or necessarily correct. V'chein amar Rabbi Shimon l'talmidav. Rabbi Shimon, about this midah, says to his talmidim, Banai shanu midotai, shemidotai trumot mitrumot midotav shel Rabbi Akiva. You should learn from what I am giving over to you. Midot over here, it does not mean midot in the sense of character, but midot means in the sense of, as Rashi says over here, Torah ti, my Torah, the measures of Torah that I give to you, you should take down because I have already taken off the tithe of the tithe of what Rabbi Akiva had given. So Rabbi Akiva, as we said before, had this tremendous vast knowledge as well as the organizational skill. And Rabbi Shimon, who is a Talmid of Rabbi Akiva. So he says that I took that tremendous, the voluminous material that Rabbi Akiva presented and I distilled it down to a concise, presentable manner where if you take this, you will basically get everything you need to get. And so that's what is said here again about this idea that he tochen harbe. He knew how to process, dump out the bad stuff, and get you to the relevant points. That's Rabbi Shimon's shita. So that we just had as a sidebar of Agadato, just to explain to us why we would take up the position of Rabbi Yossi, despite the dissensions that we saw in the Mishnah, explaining why Rabbi took up the position of Rabbi Yossi, neged other Tanaim. Now, Gufa, Amar Lishnaim, so this is the case that we brought up above to discuss this idea of instructing others to instruct others to do something. So he says, Amar Lishnaim, the person here instructs two individuals, Imru l'sofer v'yichtov, speak to the sofer that he should write it, Uploni uloploni v'yachtemu, and then so-and-so, that they should sign on it. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, kasher. That if a get is done in such a manner, it is kasher. V'lo tase zot b'Yisrael. But don't do this on a regular basis amongst Klal Yisrael. There is risk involved in this situation, which we already discussed above. The risks of the sofer being pulled in here because he feels bad about it. And so we don't want this type of instruction or processing to go on because there are high stakes, as well as a high likelihood of failure here, both because you're passing instructions for someone to instruct someone else, as well as the fact that we had, as we discussed in yesterday's daf, the possibility that the sofer will sign instead of one of the edim because they feel bad for the sofer, which would lead to a churva because then the get is a pasul get. Right, so it is a normal way of communicating, and same with that, you're right, in a managerial role in a factory, you would do the same thing, but when the stakes are very high, you wouldn't do that. Sometimes the boss doesn't go to the manager. He goes directly to the factory workers because it's so important. It's something where the stakes are so high, he doesn't want to risk that there is a miscommunication or there's a lost in translation problem, and so he goes directly. And that's what he's suggesting over here. You're right, it is a methodology, but here the stakes are so high that sometimes we need to go direct, that we prefer you go direct rather than going in this circumspect manner. Again, here specifically because of the way the instructions are laid out causes it to be even more problematic because he's assigning one person to write it, other people to sign it, rather than the people themselves that he's sending could have signed it, which we'll see in a second might take down the problem a little bit. We're not sure which way the conversation went. If it's kasher, then why are we suggesting that you don't take up this methodology? We are afraid that she might hire edim. That this is a mechanism which is ripe for abuse. Which is that she could just hire edim to go to tell other people, the husband said to write a get. She wants a get. She wants out. So the husband's not giving her a get for any reason she can't get the get. She hires two edim to go tell the sofer, and then to tell to other edim, the husband said, write the get. So already by disintermediating the husband from the situation, then you are opening up the possibility that a woman could abuse the system to her benefit. So therefore we would prefer if you went direct, because then we know that there's no lost communication or ability to falsify the information. Again, it doesn't have to be the husband himself doing it, but if the parties that he directs are the ones that must do it, then they got it from, quote-unquote, the horse's mouth. They got it from the Baal directly. Over here, all the people executing never heard from the Baal. The sofer and the signatories are all hearing it through this intermediary of Edim. And so because of that, that is where the risk is that it could be abused. Do we really worry about it? Don't we have a brayta? Edim ha-chotumim al sedeh mekach al get isha. We have this all the time, where you have witnesses signed to a document of sale. You have witnesses signed to a bill of divorce. And we don't go and suggest, maybe these edim were hired, they were false edim that signed on it. The same thing, the woman could hire edim, have a get forged or written and signed by edim and claim that she has a get. Why don't we question the validity of the edim on any document based on this? The same idea, which is, there's risk, and because there's risk, we should have to look into the matter. Mar answers, Masa lo avdi dibura ke'amre. People are willing to lie or do the wrong thing in certain ways, but not in others, which is that they are willing to communicate in a false manner to have others execute that falsehood. They themselves are not comfortable doing that. So you can hire people to instruct others to do it. Because first of all, the people who are hired feel like they're not doing anything. They're just giving the instructions. The people who are being instructed don't know that it's false. So they do all the signing and all the work without knowing that they're doing anything false. What they won't do is if you hire them to actually do the forgery itself and to sign it falsely itself, that they're less likely to do, or they're more afraid of doing, because in that case, they could be caught, much more risk involved, where they're on the stand being a witness, or they are signing a document and they're going to verify the signatures, could do some pretty permanent damage for them because they're really caught in the act. If they just speak, then it's all your word against their word. There are ways to wiggle out of it, and therefore people are willing to lie or falsify things in this manner, but not when they do the action directly. And therefore, we don't suspect people signing on documents falsely. We do suspect that they might communicate information in a false manner. Tosafot over here notes that we saw a Gemara in Yevamot, which suggested that even by Dibura, we don't suspect an individual. And Tosafot here differentiates by the nature of the Dibur. If the Dibur exercises or completes the entire action, then it's almost the same as doing the maaseh. I mean, if the dibur is what makes the difference, so for instance, they go to testify in court, and this will seal the fate of this individual, that might be the equivalent of a maaseh. Because there, the ramifications and the outcome of their speaking is the equivalent of taking action. And in those situations, then people will not lie in that situation. Here, in our case, it's a dibura that leads someone else to do the maaseh or the gemara maaseh. Their dibur doesn't complete anything. They simply are instructing others to do the action. And so therefore, Tosafot qualifies this or refines this distinction and says, it's not always a difference between dibur and maaseh. It's also a difference between through that dibur, are you completing an action? Or through that dibur, are you simply passing it on to others? In which case, you might be more willing to lie. Now the Gemara says the next case, which is Amar l'shnayim, which is the second case that we saw above. Imru l'sofer v'yichtov, tell the sofer to write it. Vatem chatomu, you yourselves sign on it. Okay, so here we don't have the chashinan aspect from the perspective of the woman falsifying the material, hiring a deem, because here the people who sign on the document are the people who are communicating the information to the sofer. So there you don't have that problem. You do have the problem, which we mentioned in yesterday's daf, which is the problem that they might feel bad for the sofer and have him sign on the document. So that's one thing that might be there. Number two is, do we connect this to the other case? Is this too close to the case where he instructs the edim to get a sofer and other edim that already we want to shut this down as well? And here you end up with the machloket. That's what we mentioned yesterday's daf, that your explanation works well for all those that say, v'lo taseh kein b'Yisrael, which means that don't do this, therefore it's not shchiach, and that's why the chachamim were not gozer. But there is a daya, which we're going to see in a second, that says this is fine. And if you do this, if that's the case, it would be a prevalent type of mechanism that was used for divorce. And if that's the case, it should be problematic. And that's why we switched the tune over there to say that Shmuel paskin like Rabbi Yossi on one hand, and not like Rabbi Yossi on the other hand, to deal with these opinions. Here are these opinions, which is Rav Chisda amar kasher velo taseh, Rabba bar Barachan amar kasher v'taseh, Rav Nachman amar kasher velo taseh, Rav Sheshet amar kasher v'taseh. What you're seeing here is basically the Rosh Kola, the Av Beit Din. You're talking about in the generation, the two Rosh Yeshiva, the two leading personalities of the generation, and each of them is taking a position that's similar to the machloket we have by smicha that the Mishnah and the Gemara there lay out generation after generation, where the leaders of the generations had differing opinions about this. And it goes on here too. You have this Rabba Amar Kasher Velo Taseh, Rav Yoshe Amar Kasher V'Taseh. Rabbi and Rav Yosef are peers, both Rosh Yeshiva, one after the other. So Rabba says it's kasher and don't do this. Rav Yosef says it's fine, it's kasher and do it. Again, the reason for those that say don't do it is because otu, We're worried about this being similar to the case before where everybody agrees you shouldn't do it. And again, we saw there was some inherent risk in this process as well. Those that say you can do it say that here we've gotten rid of the major risk, which is the falsification by the woman. You might have a problem with the sofer that you have to deal with based on your opinion, whether the sofer is allowed to sign or not sign, which also has impact on this. Ve'ika the apich luhu. There's some that flip the positions of Rabba and Rav Yosef. That is important because when you have a machloket Rabba and Rav Yosef, halacha kerabba. So depending on which side Rabba is on this machloket, will determine which way the halacha is. So if you flip it, obviously that changes the outcome as far as the halacha is concerned. Amar the asara, kitvu get. He instructs 10 people to write a get. Tana Rabbanan. Amar le asara kitvu get, utnu le ishti. He says to 10 individuals, write the get and give it to my wife. Echad kutev ayidei kulam. One of them writes on behalf of all the others. Over here, the Tosafot Reed points out here that it's obvious that one of them has to write because you can't have more than one person write it. But what it means, echad kutev ayidei kulam, is that everybody has to agree. Perush, paskamat kulam. Shukulam yadu shikishi yichtov. Everybody is aware and agrees that this individual should write on their behalf. You need a consensus in order for this individual to write, because in a sense he's representing the other 10 when he's writing on their behalf, because the instructions were to all 10 of them to write it. Obviously he knows when he instructed it, and the people who received the instructions know not everybody's going to write. So then what was the all 10 of you? Part of it is to put the responsibility on all 10 of them, but also to force them to come to a consensus about who is going to write out of these 10 individuals. Kuchem ktovu. So then, if he says, all of you write it, echad kutev b'ma'ad kulam. Obviously, again here, it's clear that you can't force all of them to write it. So when he gives an instruction like that, we have to interpret it in a manner that is logical. And that means that one writes it, but the other 9 individuals have to be there while he's writing it. So in the other case, the individual can be a proxy for the 10. Over here, he can be a proxy, but they have to be present while he does it. And that's the difference between all of you write it versus saying to 10 people, kitvu, you should write it. Holichu get li ishti, transport this get to my wife, achad molich ayidei kulam. So if he says that, amar li asara, then again, one takes it on behalf of all the others. And again, the Tosfot Ri would apply here, which is, it has to be with the consensus, who is the one who's going to take it. Kuchem, if it's all of you, achad molich be mamad kulam. He says, all of you transport it, one of them takes it in the presence of the others, meaning that they all go together as an entourage. Obviously, only one of them is carrying the actual get, but they all have to be there together. Ibayalu, manautan mahu. If he enumerates the individuals, what is the story? Ravuna amar mana enu kuchem. When he enumerates it, it does not have the equivalent halachic impact as kuchem. Yochanan mishur bablazer min Roma. So Yochanan and Rav Elazar from Rome, Amar Mana Arihu Kechuchem. Mana has the same impact as saying all of you. So Amar Rav Papa Velo Plige. They don't argue. Hadamana Kulu, Hadamano Mikzatayu. Question of how is he enumerating over here? Did he enumerate all of them? Or did he only enumerate a portion of them? The Gemara, it's not clear here when you say Lo Kasha or Lo Plige, and you give two sides, the question is which side goes with which? How do these line up? Gemara here says we don't know. Amri law the high gisa, Amri law the high gisa. Some say it in this direction, some say it in the other direction. Which means that in one case, they think that enumerating a portion of them and not all of them is a directive of kulchem. Because in that instance, there are a bunch of people here and you only enumerate a portion of them. It makes it clear that you want these specific people. And when you specify those people, it's as if you're saying kulchem. And then when you just mone all of them, that's just, you're enumerating everybody that's there. There's not as significant, or as much significance to that, because he didn't leave anybody out. And for that reason, it's not like kulchem in that instance. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it is just the opposite. If he enumerates everybody that is there, then it's clear he wants everyone to be a participant in this, and that makes it kulchem that you have to, all of you have to do it. Other than when he only enumerates a portion of the individuals over there, he is pushing the responsibility on those individuals, but not saying that all of you have to deal with it or take care of it. Those are the two ways to read it. All right. Itkin Rav Yehuda Begita de Kulchem. Rabbi Yehuda was mitakein that in a get that says kuchem in it, or instructions that involve kuchen, that you write ktovu, o kuchon, o kochad v'chad minchon. It's very clear what Rabbi Yehuda is trying to avoid is the problem that we just discussed, which is that when you say kuchem, it places a burden on those individuals to have to do it all together. And therefore, to diffuse that requirement, he said that whenever they wrote kuchem in the get, or they were communicating this way, they put the language in as o kuchon, o kochad v'chad minchon. All of you, or any one of you. Again, kuchon would mean literally all of you, you must do it together. Kochad v'chad minchon is the case where he says tasara, which is that one must do it on behalf of the others. So in order to avoid having the problem where a get would be pasul because of this instruction, in these types of gitin, or these types of instructions, they opened it up. So it never really demanded kuchon. It never really demanded all 10 of them do it. Chatomu o kuchon o kol tre minchon. They did, you sign it. The instruction was to sign it. He would say either all of you or any two of you should sign it. O vilu, you should transport it. O kuchon o kol chad v'chad minchon. All of you or any one of you should transport it. Again, all of these languages take away the demand of kuchem. And so he instituted that that be put into the get so that we don't run into gitin psulim when you lose one of these individuals. Someone passes away. Not everybody was present. They don't realize you need all 10 of them to do it. So this takes care of that problem. Amarova, zimnin de gai isle de dibure. This is not a good institution because the longer you make something to be written, the more likely is that it doesn't get written. And which part's going to get left out? The end. So if you ask them to write it, they may not write the whole thing. The part that they leave out is the most important part, which is kochad v'chad minchon. Every one of you. That's what diffuses the problem, is that every one of these individuals can be empowered to do it by themselves. If you leave that out, then you've defeated the whole purpose of the takana. Therefore, v'amar kuchon v'lomar kochad minchon. He's going to end up writing down just the kuchon and not the kochad minchon. V'ate l'ifsule. And that will end up having the get become pasul, because it's missing that latter instruction, which opened it up to everybody else. And then they'll think everybody wasn't there, or not everybody signed it, and it's a problem. El Amarava, this is how you should institute it. Tovu kochad minchon. Chatomu kotre minchon. Ovilu kochad minchon. Leave out the kuchon piece entirely, and just say, every one of you can write it, any two of you can sign it, any one of you can transport it. He took basically the part that's important, which is the part that diffuses the problem, and says, just write that in. Let's forget about this kuchem idea. Unless we're instructed otherwise, this is the language we're going to use in order to make it easier that you can get the get done without having to jump through all these hurdles and ensure that everybody is there. Okay, with that, we complete the perek. Adonai Alach HaOmer. Okay, now we begin the next parak in Gitin. The next parak in Gitin speaks about a continuation of what we just spoke about. Someone who is in a state that is either compromised, incapacitated. How do they present to get, or what do they do to present to get? The Gemara here will launch for the next couple of daf into medical suggestions about how to solve or deal with certain ailments. Again, it's not simple. Is controversial in nature, but we learn it because it's the Gemara. We'll discuss it more in detail as we get there, but it is obviously much more difficult than your usual Gemara. Mishach zo kord diyakus, someone who was struck by this problem, this disease. The way Rashi describes it here is shem shida shuletet kishushte yayin harbe migito. It's a type of shade that enters into a person when they drink a lot of wine directly from the press. So that is where it comes from, or that is the result of drinking that type of wine before it's fermented, before it's done. Basically, grape juice at the pressing area. So this is the result of that, is this kordayikus. V'amar kitvu get liishti. And then he says, write a get to my wife. Lo amar kum. He didn't say anything. Amar kitvu get liishti. Vachzo kordokaikus. If he first instructed to write the get to his wife, and then he's struck by this problem, this disease, v'chazav amar lo tichtevenu, and now he retracts, relents on his instruction, ein dvav achronim klum. Then his second instruction is meaningless because he's already been struck by this problem, And this problem compromises his ability to make good decisions or proper decisions in this case. As Rashi says, Shein da'atom yushevet alav. It's not a person who is in a state of calmness and has a clear ability to express themselves. Tosafot over here says, Vafilo amar kidvu tnu. So someone who is struck by kordogaikus, it's not simply when he says, write the get, that we say we don't follow through with the instructions. Even if he says kidvu tnu, even if he says write it and give it, we still don't follow through on the instructions. Here the Mishnah only says kidvu. You could be medayek from that, that's only because he said write it. If he said write it and give it, then we suspect maybe he really meant it, and he's in a position where he just wants it done before he falls prey to this disease. Tosafot says, no, kidvu is just an example, but it's the same by kidvu uktenu. Nishtatek, he was struck by something that silences him. He's unable to speak. Ramru lo, so obviously he's not speaking. They're speaking to him and saying, Nichtov get lishtecha? Should we write a get to your wife? V'irkin birosho. And he indicates through his head that yes. And he shakes his head up and down. And through that, he indicates yes. Over here, Rashi does not differentiate between why was nishtatek. He says, lav achzo kordag yaikus. It's not the case where he got this illness. But adam shena seilei machmat choli. This person was incapacitated and couldn't speak anymore because of sickness. He does not differentiate the nature of the sickness that causes this problem. Botkim oto shlosha pi'amim. We check him 3 times. Imamar alav, lav. If we ask him questions unrelated to the get, and we ask him a question where the answer should be clearly no, and he indicates no. Valhein, hein, and things that should be yes, he says yes. What we're trying to do here is corroborate that he is of sound mind. We don't want him just shaking his head and saying yes and assuming that he knows what he's talking about. We have to know that whatever sickness affected him and left him unable to speak didn't compromise his ability to think and be settled and make decisions. So we want to know from other evidence that he knows how to make decisions here. So Rashi over here says, by the way, Shlosh Pamim, you have to do it 3 times yes and 3 times no. You have to make sure that you test both sides of the ledger. It's not that he always just says yes or that he always just says no. You need 3 on each side to be sure that he is discerning in his answering of questions, that he can answer these complexities and understands what's going on. Then we can accept his yes as being a yes. In that case, they do write it and give it because he's able to communicate through his nodding what he really wants or what his intent is. And that's sufficient for him to give the get, or give the get willingly from the husband. Again, I mentioned before that Rashi does not distinguish between what type of choli we're speaking about here. It can be very different. There can be a sickness that compromises his ability to speak, but doesn't affect his mind at all. Over there, the tests here seem to be unnecessary, because it's clear that he's of sound mind. It's simply a sidebar of having a cold, he has laryngitis, whatever the reason is, it shouldn't be affecting his mind. There are other sicknesses where clearly his mind is being affected, and that's affecting his speech, and over there you would see these tests as being necessary. Rashi makes no distinction, but you could make a distinction along those lines, which is, it depends why you can't speak, and the test would be necessary only in cases where we suspect him losing his mind in the case of losing his speech. A stroke can be just a physical impact, or it could be something that also affects the mind. And so therefore you have to check. That would be a good case where you'd have to check. Again, a case where the guy lost his voice because he has a bad cold, it seems unnecessary to test whether he really knows yes and no in that case. Okay, the Gemara says, my kordiyakus, what is this disease? Amar Shmuel, denachte chamre chadata, dema'atzarta. It is a case where he was bitten by, there's a Rashi says, denachte is nashche, he was bitten by new wine, which is the equivalent of grape juice, dema'atzarta, that is pressed, that has just been squeezed. So it's freshly squeezed wine that has bitten him. Vilitne, why don't you just write that? Mishnashko yayin chadash, just write that out. Hakamashvalan, darucha kordiakus shema. So why doesn't the Mishnah just spell out what it is that has the ailment that has affected him? Instead of giving it the name of the ailment or the shade that is affecting him. It says, so that you know what it is. You want to know, we don't want to know just the symptoms. We want to know the core of the ailment that's affecting him. The mind afkamina. Why does that matter? Lekmia is for amulets. So if you're going to write an amulet, you need to know what you're trying to offset, what you're trying to address. So therefore, if you know that it's Quartiacus, then you know what to write in the amulet, or you know which shade you're dealing with. Versus if you just give symptoms, then you don't know what you're dealing with. Amulet. So it's something that is in the spiritual realm that deals with the forces of evil, quote-unquote, that affect an individual. And the amulets were ways to offset it, similar to maybe the ways that a Kabbalist works today, the way that the Ramban speaks about these issues, which is, doesn't mean that they know anything more or their perspective. They get a small window of information into how things are done. It's not clear who's pulling the strings, which are, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it doesn't give you information whether it already happened, it's going to happen. But because they have some of that insight or that small window into the opportunity, they're able to address it or try to address it. Again, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. And the Gemara in Shabbat speaks about people who wrote amulets, again, whether they were experts and they have a proven track record, versus others who questionable about whether they have a proven track record. It seems like that even those that were good at it, still sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't work. It wasn't a guarantee that it would work. Maya Zvate, what is the cure for this? Bisra sumka agumre. As Rashi says over here, sumka is kachush, which is lean meat. Agumre on coals. V'chamra marko. And wine that is heavily diluted. So the idea being that this was a type of what called pinuk. It was an overindulgence of sorts. So the cure to this is to take a much lighter form, or the opposite form, which is to drink heavily diluted wine and the lean meat. Amar Abaye, Amar Liyim. Abaye says, my mother told me. Abaye says this in a number of places in Shas. Abaye didn't have a mother around, because as we know, Abaye was orphaned and was brought up by Rabbo. So when he says Amar Liyim, he either means his stepmother or his nurse, whoever took care of him, not literally his biological mother. L'shimsha bat yoma, if you have fever for a day, kuza demayo, then a pitcher of water is the solution. Drink a lot of water. Batre yome, if you have a fever for 2 days, sikure, you go to the bloodletter and you have some bloodletting done. Batlata yome, for 3 days, bisra sumka agumre, this lean meat on coals. V'chamra marko, the heavily diluted wine. V'shimsha atikta, a long-lasting fever. Leite tarnagalota, uchmate, bring a black chicken. Vilikara shativ arev, you tear it lengthwise and widthwise. V'ligalche lemitziata dereshe, you shave the middle of your head. V'lotle ilave, and then you put the chicken, this sliced chicken, on top of the shaved head of this individual. Nanche yilave ad misrach. Leave it on his head until it goes bad, it rots. Velinchot velikum b'maya ad savarei. Then he should stand in water. It's not a question of whether that's sequential at the same time. He should stand in water up to his neck. Ad chalish alma yilave. Until he starts to be faint. Starts to lose things. V'leimod v'lasalik v'leyativ. So then afterwards, Rashi said v'leimod means he shot. He should float. V'lasalik v'leyativ. And then come out and sit down. So that is the prescription here. I remember traveling with someone who had come from Yemen, and they had walked from Yemen to Eretz Yisrael. And he told us that the solution for a stomach ailment was a certain solution. That he says that after they did that to you, you never got a stomachache again. It was so bad what they did to you. I say the same thing here. This is so unpleasant that you never get fever again, because you don't want to have to experience this ever again. Velo, if he doesn't have this ability to do this, or he can't go through this process, lechol karte, he should eat leeks. Velinchot, velekum amayad savare, stand in water up to his neck, adachalish alma yilave, again, until he feels faint. Velemod, and then he should float or swim, v'lasalik v'leyativ, and then he come out and sit down. L'shimsha, for fever, again, this goes back to what we were saying again, it seems like a repetition of what Abaye's quote-unquote mother told him. Bisra sumka agumre, lean meat on coals, v'chamra marka, and heavily diluted wine. The talga, for the Aramaic word for sheleg, which is snow, but here it means for the shivers, for being cold. Before we're talking about fever, here we're talking about for being cold. Bisra shmena agumre, then you take fat meat on the coals, v'chamra chaya, and strong, undiluted wine. So it's like the sharpness, the heat. So here you have the opposite impact. There you have heat, and you're trying to reduce the heat. So you can see that the methodologies that they're using are, you know, being in water to cool you down, drinking heavily diluted items, meat that is lean, all of these things which are the anti to the fever. In this instance where we have it the other way around, where the person's cold, and we have them take these strong, very powerful types of ingestions in order to improve them and to warm them back up. Rav Amram Chasida, Kavim Mitzarin Lei Bei Reish Galuta, when the house of the Reish Galuta used to give him a hard time, Havu Meganelei Atalgo, they used to make him sleep on the snow or in the cold, it's not clear what it was, but through the night they would make it very difficult for him and put him in a position where he was freezing and he would get the shivers. The Machar Amrulei, Mai Nechalei Lamar, what is your pleasure? Delight to lay that we can bring to you. They said, what's your request in the morning? After they had made his night miserable, they wanted to know what he wanted. Amar, hani kol da'amin aluhu meipach apche. Whatever I tell him, they're going to do just the opposite because he knows that they're not out for his best interest. They were not very happy with him. He gave them a hard time, as Rashi says over here. With his piske halacha, he gave them a hard time. And therefore, they wanted to get back at him. These are the abadim, these are the slaves or the servants inside of the house of the Reish Galuta, that of course, unbeknownst to the Reish Galuta, using their position of power, take retribution on some of these individuals, including this Rav Amram Chasido. So, he knew, or he figured out, that they're gonna flip whatever he says. Amarlo, bisra sumka agumre v'chamra marko. Says them, I want lean meat and heavy diluted wine. I delay inho. They brought him just the opposite as he suspected, which was bisra shmena, fatty meat, agumre on coals, v'chamra chayo, and very potent, undiluted wine, which is the proper antidote to the shivers that we mentioned up above. So he accomplished that by reversing his statement. This is going to remind you a little bit about the story of Rav and Rav Chia, where he had a difficult marriage, and Rav says to his son, oh, your mother has improved over the years. Now she's bringing me what I want. And Rav Chia, his son, says to him, that's not exactly what's happening. I realized that everything I told her, she brought you the opposite. So I started to flip it and say the opposite so she would bring you the right thing. That's how it ended up. Rav tells him not to do that. Because Rav implied in that statement says, you who aren't involved directly in the situation and you who it doesn't affect should not be lying to rectify the situation. But Rav himself, who understood what the situation was, might have been permitted to lie because his lie is not really a lie. It's a way to get what he really wants. And same thing over here. Rav Amram Chasido understood that they would bring him the opposite, and therefore he himself said the opposite. Shama Yalta. Yalta gets wind of this. Yalta is the wife of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman is married into the house of the Reish Galuta. Yalta is, we'll call her a princess of the Bay Reish Galuta, and Rav Nachman marries into the family, and therefore Rav Nachman carries weight, not only as an Av Beit Din, but also as his relationship to the Reish Galuta. But Yalta gets wind of the fact that they're treating or mistreating Rav Amram Chasida. She brings him into not necessarily the doctor's office, but to the merchatz, to the bathhouse, which in many cases might have be synonymous with them, because going to the bathhouse was a way to purge oneself and to receive attention, right, like a sauna. She put him into the water of the bathhouse. Then until the waters of the bathhouse, Baba Dama, and they were bloodied. Now, whether that literally means that there was blood or they turned red, as Rashi says here, from the secretions that were coming out of his body, from the fatty meat and the wine, the strong wine that he drank, which was both red, red meat and red wine, which we would see as being hot colors. Red is associated with hot, and that's the antidote to the sheleg. Versus the lean meat and the diluted wine, which are much whiter, which are a cooling agent against the heat, the fire. So that's, he says, V'kai bisrei pshitei pashit. His skin became blotches or patches of white. I guess from the secretion they left behind these white blotches on him. Rav Yosef yasek berechayav, Rav Sheshet yasek bekushure. When they were cold, Rav Yosef used to work the mill to build up a sweat and to warm himself up. Rav Sheshet used to carry around heavy beams in order to do that. Remember here that both Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshet are sagi nahor, or blind. So they couldn't do what normal people did in terms of work, in terms of exercise to warm themselves up or to eat themselves up. So here it discusses what they did in order to warm themselves up. Something with working the mill, which Rav Yosef could do even when he's blind. Rav Sheshet could carry on beams even when he's blind, could make that exertion to warm themselves up. Amar gedola melacha shemechamemet et ba'alah. How great is work that it warms the one who is engaged in work, and you break a sweat and it heats you up. When you're active, you're less likely to feel cold or to feel those shivers. And so that's the antidote to feeling cold and the shivers is to get up, to move around, to generate heat. Amale Reish Galuta Rav Sheshet. Rav Reish Galuta says to Rav Sheshet, my time at Losoid Mar Gaban. Why do you not join us for the meal? That was part of the house of the exilarch, the Reish Galuta, was that he had a table, just like a king has a table where he feeds all of his advisors, the people that are close to him. Reish Galuta also used to have the people that were close to him eat at his table, including many of the Tamidei Chachamim. So the Reish Galuta is inquiring as to why Rav Sheshet doesn't join them for the meal. Malay d'lo malu avde, d'chashidia ever minachai. He says, the avadim, the servants that work here, are not trustworthy. And I mechoshesh them for bringing Eivor Min HaChai, which is a serious infraction, something that even Bnei Noach are instructed on. So even if the servants are not Jewish, Eivor Min HaChai is something that is problematic for them as well. Amalei mi yemar, he says, how do you know? How do you know that they're suspected of doing such things? Amalei, hashta mechavina lecha. I'll prove it to you. Amalei l'shamei, says to his servant, or the person who's being meshamesh Rav Sheshet, zil gnov, go steal something from the kitchen. Aitali chadakara michayuta. They had shechted an animal to serve at the meal. Says to his servant, go steal one of the legs of the animal and bring it over here to me. Aitali, he brought it to them. Amalahu, hadmoli, hadme de chayuta. Set before me the pieces of the animal. I mean, bring out all the steaks and the ribs and everything. Let's have the meal here. Aitu tlat kare. They only could bring out three legs because one of the legs was missing. Amalahu. How about that shlosh regalim avai? This animal that you're serving only had three legs, didn't have a fourth leg? Obviously it's a trade for then. What's going on here? Pasuk aitu chadami alma. They went and got a fourth leg. They went and cut off another animal, brought a fourth leg over. Otivu kamei. Then they put it down in front of him. Amar le l'shamei, otvei nami lahach didach. He says to his mishamish, bring out the other leg that you stole before. Otva, he put it down. I'm like, oh, hi, bat chamesh regalim avi. Is this a five-legged animal? Because now there were four in front of him, but he knew he had one of the legs, and he showed it the five. So what he proved from that was that they were bringing Eivor Min HaChai. When they felt pressured, or they felt that something happened, whether if it was stolen by accident, or that he is saying that they are suspected of stealing. They eat for themselves, they take for themselves, and they just replace it with something from somewhere else. So I have an animal with four legs. They eat one of the legs, and they just replace it by bringing in another leg or an Eivor Min HaChai. And they're not trustworthy. So Amalei, Yochi, La'avdu kamei shamei, demar, velechu. Says, let them work in front of you and you'll eat. Amalei, lechaye. Okay. Let them set up, let them work in front of you, and then you won't have any suspicions. It's not so straightforward because Rav Sheshet is sagi nahor. He's blind. So he really can't control the situation totally. And therefore, he may not have never felt comfortable about what was going on. Karibo taka kamayu. They brought before him a shulchan, a table. Vayde kamei bisra. And they put meat out on it. Votivu kamei ristano dechanko chamto. They brought in front of him a piece of meat that contained within it a bone that is small enough that you would swallow it, but big enough that you would choke on it, especially someone who's blind and can't see the bone that is there. So they bring it out, basically, to get rid of him. He has just embarrassed them in front of the Reish Galuta. These are not exactly your best people over here. and they want to get rid of Rav Sheshet. So they bring him out as blind Rav Sheshet. They bring him out a piece of meat that he's could possibly a bone that he's going to choke on. Gushashay, like is the case by most blind people, he touched it, he feels it, meaning that they use other senses to make up for their lack of sight, and he realizes that the bone is there. Shakla kracha misudre. He took it and wrapped it up in his turban or in his cloak. He takes it and doesn't eat it. Rashi over here, what he took was the bone. He took the bone and he wrapped it up to show it to the Rish Galuta later on. Tosfot over here says that he wrapped up all the meat. He didn't eat the meat at all. He took a little bite of it, smelled of it, and he thought it was bad, which we're going to see in a second, and therefore he didn't eat it. Gavata d'achil, amri lei ignav lan kasa d'kaspa. After the meal was over, the servant said to the Rish Galuta that a silver goblet was stolen from us because they saw him wrapping something up. So what did they suspect him of? They thought he took something valuable. He took something from the table and put it in his cloak. So as they were looking or searching him for it, they find either the piece of meat or the bone in his sudar. Amri lei, chazi mar galo meichel kabai. You see that you really don't want to eat. Ela letzuran. You're just here to make our lives miserable. Because obviously, he caught them in trying to choke him. And he stores it in his sudar, which is clearly going to show to the Reish Galuta afterwards. And they are going to be incriminated by what he is doing. And that's what they say to him. You know, all you're doing here is causing us problems. You're not doing anything to our benefit. So Amar lo, ana meichel alchi. He says, I did taste it, but I tasted in it the taste of white. As Rashi says over here, basar balat shchin. And it means that it's meat that was affected by shchin, some sort of boils, blisters, diseased meat. And Rav Sheshet, who is blind, can't tell that. But either through his sense of taste or smell, he was able to figure out that this was bad meat. So that's what Tosafot says. He wrapped the whole piece up and didn't eat it because of that. Rashi says he just wrapped up the bone. So Amri lei chivara lo avid lan ha'idna. Today, we didn't find any meat with boils, blisters, or problematic meat here. I don't know what you're talking about. Amri lo badku biduchte. Check its location. Rashi says over here, what's biduchte? Bo'or ayu bodkim makom ristana. Go check in the place where that bone is. Bekafa yerech. In the area of the hip joint, the timzano ba'or shehu lavan, and you'll find there that the skin is white. Damar of Chista, Chista tells you, ukma b'chivara, black where it's supposed to be white. B'chivara b'uchmeta, or white where it's supposed to be black, lakutahi, that is a sign of disease, that's a sign of a problem. Tosfot over here quotes the Gemara Nazir that we saw about there, where they're discussing about the selling of an eder of animals, or shvarim, if there's a white one or a black one involved in there, they quote this memra of Rav Chista over there, saying a white amongst the black or black amongst the white changes the value of the herd. So over there, it's talking about the entirety of the animal. Over here, it seems to be talking about a specific location on the animal, like a blotch on the animal in some location where it's supposed to be dark, it's light, or where it's light, they're dark. Tosfot over here says that the girsa here and there are different. The memra of Rav Chista here is about a specific location on one animal. The memra of Rav Chista over there is about different animals, meaning white and black in two different animals. Over here it's talking about white and black in a single animal. And therefore you can't equate the girsaot. That's what it is. You have to differentiate the girsaot because they're talking about different things. If you equate the girsaot, it makes no sense anymore. Boduk, they checked it. Ashkechua, they found that the meat was problematic. Kika Nofik, when he was leaving, they had enough with him. Karulei Bira, they dug a pit, a bore, a cistern, a pit. Vishadulei Tzifta Ilavei, and they put out a mat on top of it. Classic trap, where there's a mat on top of a pit, and he's going to walk onto it. He's blind, and he's going to sink into the pit and either be injured, hurt, or caught by this. Vramilei Leitei Mar Linach. So he says, come here, why don't you go ahead and rest, or why don't you go lay down? So they're directing him to go where he's supposed to go. Nachar le Rav Chista. Rav Chista snorted miachorei from behind him. Amrele the Yanoka. At that point, Rav Sheshet turns to a child and says, Psokli psukech. Tell me what you're learning. Tell me the pasuk you're learning. This is in the Gemara, throughout the Gemara, we saw this back by the Garata of the Churban HaBayit, that Niron Kesar, when he came to Yerushalayim, says to a child, Psokli Psukech, tell me your Pasuk. They saw this as a mini form of Nivu'ah, an indication of information that what the Pasuk that was said had relevance to them. So he says, Amalei, Netelecha Ayamincha O Al Smolcha, you should go to your right or to your left. So he took that as an indication that he shouldn't go straight. So Amalei L'Shamei Maika Chazit says to his Shamash, what do you see? Amalei Tzifita Deshadja, I see a mat that was put down. Amalei Hadar Mina, don't go that way. Let's go somewhere else. Now, whether they put down the mat for him to walk on, or that was what they were telling him to lie down on, but whatever it was, they wanted to trap him. He is informed by this pasuk that he shouldn't do it. So then, Vatar Nafak, after he left there, Amalei Rav Chista, Menahav Yodomar. How did you know there was a trap there? How did you know there was a problem? It says, Amalei Chada Denocha Limar. The first thing is because you snorted. Now, whether, I guess that was an involuntary snort of Rav Chista, but it was a siman from Hashem to tell him to look into this. Or rather, Rav Chista knew about it, but he couldn't say anything because the Abadim of the Beit Rish Galuta would have hurt him. So he tried to indicate to Rav Sheshet through a snort to be careful. He says, and on top of that, I got the indication through the psukim that told me go left or right. That these individuals are not trustworthy. That they are not exactly your best characters. And therefore we have to worry about them. Okay, we're going to stop here, 17 lines down on Samachet Amud Aleph.